Hello and welcome to the Donor Egg Mama podcast for soul-led intended parents considering a donor egg pathway and parents of donor egg conceived children. I'm your host, Adele O'Connor, a qualified fertility coach and proud donor egg mama. I'm just a normal mum that went on an extraordinary journey to conceive. I hope this podcast helps you in some way to break free from emotional overwhelm, face your fears, and find the courage to move forward and bring that baby that's on your heart into your reality. Let's talk openly about our emotions and all topics donor egg IVF. Thanks for listening. Hello, my dear listeners, and welcome to another episode of Donor Egg Mama. Today is a big day for me as it marks the first of my new series, Donor Egg Mama's Talk, Stories of Inspiration. It's been my mission since I started this podcast just 8 months ago to share stories from real everyday women who've been through the donor egg journey in order to, one, lift the veil of secrecy and shame that's sometimes associated with using donor eggs, and two, to offer hope and inspiration for those on the journey behind us. So today I started my day at 4 a.m. in order to chat to my first guest, the lovely Megan. For those that don't realize, I'm in Sydney, Australia. Megan's in Midwest America. And I'm going to go straight ahead and introduce Megan now. So Megan is a wife, she's a dog owner, and she also works full-time in higher education and is the proud donor egg mama to her four-year-old son, who's about to start kindy soon. So Megan, I'd love you to firstly give our listeners some insights into your fertility journey leading up to the birth of your son.
Sure. I was 29 years old and I had had surgery for fibroids. And once I got in there, they found out I had a lot of endometriosis. It was very severe. And they told me right away, if you want to have kids, you need to do it now. So it was very shocking at 29, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I was like, oh, no problem. Like, this is going to happen. It's going to be really fast. And things just did not go that way. So after a couple months, my cycles had changed. I asked to be referred to a fertility specialist. And they did all the tests. And they found out I had premature ovarian failure, which was devastating news, you know.
Absolutely, yeah.
I wasn't 30 yet. So I was 29. But you still have this feeling, right? That, you know, you only need one egg.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, I just need one, you know, it's going to be fine. But we did several rounds of IVF and we got a few eggs, but nothing ever really took. Mm-hmm. We had several cycles, we got no eggs. And so I went to different doctors trying to find some miracle, you know, to make things happen. And so I finally did find a doctor who was able to convince me that donor eggs was literally the only way to go. One additional cycle, just so I could say, like, I did everything I possibly could. So my journey took about 4 years before we were able to finally get to doing donor eggs. And it was a very long 4 years for us. We were newly married, so it was a big stressor, right, on our marriage.
Yeah, and also at that time, you've got people asking you, you know, are you going to start a family soon and all of those questions?
Yes. Well, and to make it even more difficult, my brother and his wife were trying to have children as well, and they got pregnant right away, and they had their baby, and we're still going through, you know, this whole grieving process and trying to get to our goal. And so that was extremely difficult throughout those years. Even when we finally got to donor eggs, then they got pregnant again while we were trying to go through the donor egg process. And so it was very stressful. But once we switched to donor eggs, our first transfer was successful. So
that's amazing. And, you know, obviously you've been through a huge journey, and to be so young
that, you know, it would have been so hard, because often using donor eggs is associated with, you know, women, you know, trying who are older, you know, often in their 40s. So yeah, it must have been hard for you on a few level, many levels, but one of the levels, because of, you know, because of your age, and not, I would imagine you sort of hadn't heard of any other stories of perhaps people your age having to use donor eggs. Is that right?
That is right. Yeah, I didn't even know that this could happen to people my age, you know, because it is like most people know it's an older potentially thing, or maybe someone who had cancer or, you know, some other medical related illness that could have an impact. And so it was definitely very hard to deal with. And I'd like to say I'm over it, but I'm not, right? We did try after we had our son to have another 5 embryos left to use. We went through another year and a half of fertility treatments. And yeah, so we ended up with secondary infertility, and eventually ran out of eggs. The stress, the money, having to find another donor, you know, all the things just kind of compounded. And so we are now one and done.
That's really, really difficult. I mean, you know, wonderful, you got your miracle child, and of course, you know, that is absolutely amazing. But once you have that child, there is always that kind of, you know, that feeling, oh, you know, I'd love to try for another. And obviously, you know, you've got 5 embryos there, and you know, potentially 5 siblings. But I think that just highlights how, you know, some people think using donor eggs is just a guarantee of having a child, and sadly, it's not. So yeah, and you've experienced that. Obviously, you were really lucky first time, but then with those other embryos, you weren't lucky. So yeah, that's devastating.
Because we were lucky that first time, right? And it's, oh, it's just my eggs, right? So everything else is great, you know, and is not the problem. So I think we had unrealistic expectations potentially going into that next round of things. Like, oh, like obviously, you know, it'll be easy. But yeah, that's not what happened.
And did your fertility specialist offer you any insights as to why it might not have happened for you?
Yeah, I had to have at one point I had a DNC just to kind of clear everything out. Like they thought I had some scar tissue, stuff like that. They really did at the end put it down to endometriosis. And so that it had kind of come back and it was not making a very good environment. It was hard on the transfers because I did have some of the scar tissue from a C-section and, you know, a lot of those types of things. And so they had a plan if I wanted to move forward, but it involved surgery and finding another donor. And at that point, you know, you have to find when is the time to stop, you know? And it was hard for my husband too because he wasn't 100% on board going for that second one, because I had a lot of pregnancy complications, well, birth complications. And so, you know, once we got to that point, it was really hard to convince him that yes, we need to keep pushing, you know.
And you know, just rewinding a little bit further back into your story, when you were diagnosed with premature ovarian failure, how was it for your husband then?
I think that he was really upset. I just remember sitting in the car outside of the fertility clinic afterwards, and we literally just bawled together in the car because, like, what else are you gonna do? You know? I think that he says that this to this day, that if we didn't have kids, he would be happy, right? You know, but you know, we put all this time and effort and love into it. And so he's extremely happy with our one. But at the same time, I think sometimes it hits men maybe differently than women, especially whenever it came down to I was the problem versus him. You know, I think it may have hit a little bit differently if it was something on his end versus something on my end.
And was he very open to using a donor? Was there any roadblocks for him mentally?
I think it took us a while to get there, like both of us. But his thing from the very beginning was if we did use donor egg, that, it was mine. It was going to be my child. Like it was still going to have characteristics similar to myself. So he didn't fight it too terribly hard, because we both had the same goal. And at that point, after 4 years of going through everything, we were both on the same page.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I wonder if you could just tell us a little bit about what it was like to find a donor, first of all. What did, did you go via a clinic, or how did that work for you?
Yeah, so we did go through our clinic, and they had an in-house donor program. And I don't know the reasonings behind it, but theirs was completely anonymous. So we did not know who the people were in this program. We also did not really get to choose our donor. And so we filled out an application that listed everything, about us, what we were kind of looking for, things that were important. And then we turned it into the donor egg coordinator. And they then kind of looked at their database to see anybody who was currently there that matched us. And then they would send us one person to review and look over to see, if we felt they were a match or not. And
And sorry, Megan, was that like a profile with pictures of them as an adult, as a child? Oh, okay.
No pictures at all. No children pictures or adult pictures. It was literally their application that they had filled out. And what they said about themselves, basically, and any family history.
So what kind of information were you looking at there? Like, just about their interests, or was it all very medical?
It was a little bit of both, so a lot of medical stuff, characteristics physically, any kind of medical issues within their family, heights, weights, ethnicities of their family members. But then there was also a section of like, why are you donating? And, what are you currently doing? So our donor was a student, which I think is probably pretty common. What do they do for fun? And, what are their interests and things too? It was probably, I don't know, 7, 8 pages long.
And how old was your donor?
She was in her early 20s. And so that first donor that we application we'd received, we actually ended up turning down. And then it was probably another month, 2 months later. And then we got another one, and we actually did go with the second donor that we were kind of given.
And what was your reason for choosing the second one over the first one?
It was so long ago, I don't even remember why we said no to the first person. But the person, one thing that I really wanted, and we all want different things, right? When you're looking at a donor, some people want them to be tall because they're tall, or blue eyes because they have blue eyes, or they want someone who's really into math, one thing though, and I remember it just standing out, and it's kind of a weird reason, but besides the fact that they were had blue eyes, which was something that I wanted because we both had blue eyes, the second piece was that they were going to school for like an engineering type of field. And my brother, and I have a lot of family members too, who kind of went into like the engineering side of things. And so that helped us make a connection. And that's why we did it.
That's really interesting, and I think that will help listeners out there that are, in that selection process and just wondering, how do I choose? Obviously you weren't given barely any choice at all. And I'm just curious, did you know about other ways to choose a donor at that time, or were you just, you had trust with this fertility clinic because they'd been with you through all of your issues? Like, how did that, why did you stay with that clinic?
A couple reasons. One was money.
Yep,
because
it's a big stress.
and I was lucky because fertility coverage is not necessarily something that is covered a lot in the US with our insurance companies, but I was lucky enough that mine did, which
Okay.
included donor. But there were some rules to that that had to be followed if insurance was going to cover it. And they only would cover certain pieces. I knew about other clinics that, or companies really, right? That you could go in, make a profile, see the pictures, pick lots of eggs, and all of those things. But they were significantly more expensive. In the state where we did our transfer, they actually have a cap on how much money you pay to the donor for their time. You're not paying
Sure.
for their eggs, you're paying for their time. And so
Okay.
it was significantly cheaper to do it there in that state than it was if we would have paid for the lot of eggs and the clinic to ship it and all of those things. Whereas my insurance would pay for our donor to have, the whole process done, just like it was me. And
Yeah.
so that made a huge decision for us was to go that route. Now, I'm
Yeah.
not to say I didn't look the other way because I did. I was impatient, right? Because it's like we made this decision. I want to move forward and I want this to happen immediately.
That's
So waiting.
what
Yes, it's like waiting for like them to send this application and find a donor, felt so painful.
Yeah.
So yes, I looked around, but it really did come down to money.
Yeah, absolutely. And that really is for, many people. That's certainly for me, that was the number one, deciding factor, really. Well, not number one, but it was a huge element of filtering down the choices that we could make was our financial means. And I know for many listeners out there also understand that and relate to that because it's not where you're at now, at that moment financially. It's everything that you've spent already on this journey, is huge. And it can be really financially debilitating to go through this process. I had to really personally, shift a lot of stuff around my money mindset as well, to kind of think. And I'm sure, same for other people. You kind of have to go, okay, just let go of it all. Money comes, money goes. And obviously, this is, the most important thing to me right now, beyond any material other things.
Yes, exactly. And so we were able to make it work. But if we had not had insurance, because we know we're lucky that we had that, I don't know if we would have been able to financially have done it. And so
Yeah.
I'm super, super thankful, for my
Yeah.
job that helped with that. Like I'm sure we would have eventually have found a way, but it would have taken a lot of time. And we may not have had as many shots at it, right? That
Sure.
we did.
Yeah, amazing. Oh, I'm so happy for you, Megan, that you were lucky and you had that insurance cover. What was the biggest challenge for you around using donor eggs, sort of emotionally? What came up for you?
Yeah, I think that we all have, these future, I don't know, expectations, right? Of what our families are going to look like, what our children are going to look like, what they're going to be like, right? Based off of ourselves and other family members. And for me, it was a grieving process. Like I had to learn and grieve the family and the children that I thought I was going to have. Right. And that was difficult. I really struggled with it. I was very lucky that I had a therapist, a counselor who did focus in fertility. Having someone to go to and kind of like talk that through and who could provide resources and things like that was very helpful for me. And I feel like I probably grieved through the whole process, honestly. We did get pregnant and we were excited, but I don't know. Like, you always had this fear, right, in the back of your mind that something was going to happen and something was going to go wrong. And I don't think we really like enjoyed like the process at all. Looking back now that, he was our only, it's a little sad that we didn't have as much of that, joy. But I will say that I did have nightmares like whenever I was pregnant that like the baby was going to be like completely different race or completely different, characteristics, and that it was going to be so noticeable, right? That people would go, that's not your kid. And so that was kind of hard to kind of deal with, like my subconscious that was
Because
kind
you
of fighting
didn't,
me.
yeah, absolutely. And I totally get that because you hadn't seen any photographs at all. You were just putting all your trust in the clinic. So yeah, that's interesting that your subconscious would bring up those kind of nightmares.
Yes. But I will say, like, once we actually like had him, like all of those like initial fears and everything kind of just went away, because there he was, no matter what he looked like, no matter who he ended up being someday, he was ours, and
Absolutely.
we loved him. And so do we still grieve? Yes. I think I've had to grieve numerous times through this process, especially when the, trying to have a sibling didn't work out, knowing that he is the last, so every, kindergarten, it's going to be my first and my last in the next piece. But I don't really think about it anymore that he's a donor egg child, I forget my family members. They forget all the time. I thought that I was always going to be hurt, when they would make comments like, oh, they do something like so and so, Uncle Joe, or, but I don't know. It just didn't matter
Yeah,
anymore.
absolutely. What was the moment like when you first held your child in your arms? What was that like for you?
Yes. So, I was really drugged up.
Okay.
That was an interesting process, but I remember like the first time I saw him, like I couldn't move, because I was in surgery, and I looked at my husband and I said, he is so beautiful. And I started crying, and then I told my husband, I need to go to sleep right now. And that's exactly what I did. I passed out. But when I came to and I actually got to hold him and stuff, like it was just pure love, And after the fact, I did develop preeclampsia.
Oh no.
Yeah, and I ended up in the hospital for twice over the next like week, week and a half. And I struggled so hard with that because I didn't get to be around him that much. My parents, my mom and his mom took care of him while I was trying to get better in the hospital. And that was very difficult because I was afraid, like, we weren't in a bond, right? Because that beginning part is so crucial. But once we kind of got back into the routine of everything, then that kind of worry went away.
Yeah, good. Yeah, it sounds like you had a rather difficult birth experience and to then have the complications post-birth as well. Must have been really hard for you.
Yes, it was very stressful.
I can imagine. So tell me how it's been for you to think about sharing your conception story, with your child. What does that look like and feel like for you?
Yes. So that's one thing that we decided early on, even before we had him, was that we wanted to be upfront. We wanted to be honest about his conception. A lot of research has shown, that if you kind of hide it from them and they find out later, with you not telling them, that that could have some major impacts on their identity and their trust in you. And so we always knew from the beginning we were going to tell him. And it was one thing to know that. It was another thing to actually do it. And it's hard too, like to, because you're still grieving in a way, like and trying to put it out there. But I think the thing that we use the most has been books. So I did buy a couple books that, kind of simple, laid out information. So we probably started reading that to him when he was around 2 or 3. Not that he really kind of understood too much of it, but I think part of it was just helping me to be comfortable to say it,
Yes, it's practicing,
without.
isn't it?
Yeah, so I wouldn't cry, or I wouldn't, make a big deal about it. And then now that he's 4, at night before we go to bed sometimes, he'll say, "Tell me a story," And so that's when I then decided to tell him his story, and how he kind of came to be. And it's very simple, very, condensed in like 2 minutes. And we always end it with, "You're wanted, you're very loved, we did all this because we loved and wanted you, I don't think that he necessarily understands a lot of it, but he can't ever say that he wasn't wanted, first of all. But second of all, that we've, tried to be upfront and honest about it. And that doesn't mean I'm not worried about later. Once he starts asking more questions, I don't know what kind of questions he's going to ask.
The unknown is frightening, right? Because you want to do the right thing. You don't want your child to suffer in any way, at all. And that's, I guess that's the fear of all parents about all sorts of things. But I think you've done the right thing. You've spoken to your child about it. You've used books, which is a really easy and easy way for them to digest information. And that's, that they're soaking that information in, and then you're telling them a really nice, simple story, and telling them how loved they are. And I think just doing all of that, all of the things you've done, Megan, just helps. It just, means that in the future there's not a memory of the big reveal as such. Your child grows up knowing, just always knowing. It's just part of his story. He just grows up knowing that, yeah, I'm donor conceived, and my parents went through a lot, and they love the hell out of me. And you sound like you're really open to support his curiosity as he grows. And that's all that you can do as parents, is support their curiosity and keep working on your own emotions and your own feelings around the journey that you've been on. Because as you say, you're still, there's still elements of grief there, because you've been through a lot.
Yes. Well, and I just worry, because we decided to do the anonymous, like, donor route, I don't have a lot of information for him. I still have the application, right? So I can give him basic facts and information, but we signed documents that said we will not look for them. So there is like a donor conceived like registry that you can join. And I know that other people have used that same donor. So I'm pretty confident that he has, some genetic siblings out there somewhere in the world. But we have decided right now we are not going to put ourselves out on that platform, because we don't necessarily feel like it is our decision. And so
Absolutely.
that's something he will have to decide when he's old enough, if he wants to go down that route, to see if the donor put themselves out there, to see if any of the other families have put themselves out there. And it's just hard to. There's so many different like DNA platforms and stuff out there too. And so we've decided not to do that either. Again, if he wants to in the future, it's just hard, because you just don't know. There's so many unknowns. We can only control the right now, and that's what we're trying to do.
Absolutely. And Megan, I don't think there's a right or wrong answer. It's whatever is right for you and your family, because we chose an anonymous donor as well. It wasn't, as I say, it wasn't necessarily a choice. I would have loved to have a known donor. I would have absolutely loved that. But financially, that was the route that was the most practical route for us ended up being a donor, anonymous donor, but we did have, we do have a profile and we do have a photo. We've got a little bit of information, not too different to what you have really. And of course, we've spoken to our child and we're open to sharing all the information that we have. And I think from that space onwards, it really is up to the family. And you've made that decision, and you're not saying that you're not going to keep any information away from your child. You just want them to take the reins on that, right? For them to have absolute autonomy on what they choose to do. So you're supporting their curiosity as they mature and decide what to do themselves. That's all you can do is have an open mind and be supportive to your future child. Megan, I'm conscious that I've kept you talking for a little while now. So I just wanted to ask before we wind down our conversation, for any of our listeners out there, what advice would you give anybody that was faced with the same situation as you?
That is a great question. And I wish that I had done it sooner. But I also knew myself, right? That I needed to know that I did everything that I could. So by the time we did do it, like I felt that was the next step, right? And that no matter what, I was true to myself and what I was trying to do. I know that people really like you worry about connecting, you worry about, the genetics pieces and will they look like me or what will people say or, all of that kind of stuff. And they are legitimate concerns and worries. But I actually talked to someone who had did like the donor egg route and hearing her story and her journey like really helped me to come to terms with mine. And the other piece that really helped me was I never say it right.
Epigenetics,
Thank you. Yes, I never say it right. Knowing that, there were going to be some slice of me, in that process. And that no matter what, I was the person who grew him. I was the one who took care of him. I was the one who was there, And that helped me tremendously. And you're always in a worry through the whole process. But it does get better, I feel like, on the other side. And I'm so happy to be on that other side.
Absolutely.
And so I don't know if that's necessarily advice, right? But and try to enjoy that process too. Don't always wait for like that next bad thing or, through that process. Because I do have regrets on that we had, taken a little bit more time to enjoy that journey versus trying to just hurry to the destination after all that time.
I guess the fear is hard to let go of when you finally get pregnant. You're kind of your brain has been sort of in fight or flight for that whole fertility journey, all the cycles that didn't work out and all the disappointments that you had to endure up to that point. And it's hard for your brain to suddenly switch into, yay, this is perfect, it's going to work out. You're just waiting for the rug to be pulled away from beneath you, and you kind of just want to reach those little milestones. Every single scan is full of anxiety and fear that you're going to get bad news. I totally hear you. And that's why I think it's so important to get support. Were you seeing your therapist during that time?
Yes, I did. And that was so helpful. She helped us to the egg donor journey, but then all the way through pregnancy and even afterwards, to kind of talk through some of those fears and how do you have conversations and, how, does it all kind of come together? And that was super, super helpful for my own mental health, but also just so that I had someone to talk to because it is extremely isolating. It's not necessarily something that you talk about at work or, to all your friends. And It's just hard to like to put your business out there like that. And having a safe space to go to really did make a difference.
Absolutely. Yeah. There are, more and more support groups. There are more and more therapists out there that even perhaps have been on the journey themselves that, now want to help other women on that journey. I know that was, the massive motivator for myself. And yeah, it just helps so much to have that safe space. It really, really does. And in terms of your family and friends, were they supportive on your journey at all?
My parents were very supportive, and there's a lot of anxiety there, to tell them that that was what we did. There are still some people in my husband's family who don't know, for a wide variety of reasons, and close friends, were supportive of the process, but it's not necessarily something either that we just go tell people.
Yeah.
And so in some ways, I worry about that. Will my son say something in kindergarten, to his teacher, and then you have to explain. But generally, yes, everybody has been super positive and supportive, which did help ease some of that burden.
Yeah, amazing. And how do you feel about how you look as a family now, the three of you? Do you get any comments about, you and your son or anything like that? How's that sort of side of the journey been for you?
Yeah, so he is a mini copy of his father, which I think in some ways is like makes things a little bit easier, It's like, oh yeah, he looks just like his dad, but I do get comments at times that where people are like, oh, he looks just like you, or like he has your hair, he has your eyes, and those are really hard, to handle, And I don't know, I'm awkward, and I always just go, okay, thanks, or thanks, I really think he's a carbon copy of his dad, or those types of things. But generally, like, I don't know, he looks like us. And my husband likes to say that even though he is his mini me, he has my personality, my stubbornness, some of my characteristics. And he's like, my husband really feels that he's mine through and through, even though we used a donor,
Yeah, beautiful. And he is yours through and through. You birthed him. And I was listening to a podcast the other day that was explaining epigenetics really, really well. It was Dr. Jesse Wade, who is, I think the, forgive me if I say this wrong, I'll have to correct myself, but I think the director of third party reproduction for Generation Next in New York. And he was explaining so well epigenetics. And he said that the environment of where that embryo is placed and the unique environment of the intended parent, the woman, has a 30% impact on how that child develops and grows in terms of personality, in terms of turning on certain genes on or off, which determines so many things in that child. So, yeah, that was news to me. That was really wonderful to hear that 30% impact. Yeah, I'll take that. that was more than I realized. So, it's they're their own people that are born through us, that it's that beautiful soul that decided to come to you, through whatever means. So they're their own people. They obviously take traits from the father, from the donor, and from you as well. So, I think it's just such an incredible miracle, and we're so lucky to have this science. Yeah.
And I am very thankful that we do live in a time right now where this is an option and that it is more accepted, as an option, so that we had that opportunity, right, to become parents in the way that we did.
100%. And I'm really interested to know, Megan, sort of reflecting back on your journey. Obviously, you've been through so many really hard times and you've had to draw on a lot of emotional resilience. Do you feel like your fertility journey has taught you anything? Do you feel like there's been any kind of shifts in in you as a person that you can talk about?
Yeah, I think that it did teach me patience, through the process. Nothing was ever quick and nothing was ever fast. It was like hurry up and wait, right? So I think I got very, very good at doing that. I think that it also taught me to be a little bit more thankful for what I do have and what I've been given. I think, especially on the day-to-day parenting, right? Parenting's hard. I don't care who you are, but it's hard.
It's
And
hard.
it's hard, and even though it's hard, like there's always that thing like in the back of my head that says, yes, this is hard right now, but it will get better. And I'm still thankful that I have this hard because I never thought I would. And so I think that kind of changes your shift in your focus just a little bit, where maybe family is a little bit more important than maybe it would have been otherwise.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. No, that's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. And I also feel like I need to say that for women specifically on this donor egg journey to parenthood, often, certainly I felt this often when you finally become a mum and and it's not all joy and wonder, it is bloody brutal at the start. It's really hard work. And I feel like it can be really hard to feel like you've got the right to complain or the right to feel shitty or the right to feel exhausted because you're like, I wanted this so much. I put myself through so much to get to this point, and you can be like really hard on yourself when you're not having those days, when you're having those days where you're not enjoying being a mum. And let's face it, that happens a lot.
Yes, I agree 100%. I've had those thoughts as well. And yeah, it's just hard, to kind of wrap your head around everything because we did do so much to get here, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, we feel like it has to be rainbows all the time when it's not always, yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. Oh, so thank you so much, Megan. It's been lovely talking to you. I really appreciate your honesty and openness, and I know that you would have, helped other people that you also could have been diagnosed with premature ovarian failure at a young age and been faced with using donor eggs. I'm sure it'd be so helpful to hear your story and hear your insights and know that, it did work out for you, that you are mum to your gorgeous son and, enjoying family life. So yeah, thank you very, very much. And I look forward to connecting with you perhaps again in the future.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
Dear listeners, if you enjoy this episode, you might want to join my free Facebook group called Donor Egg IVF Emotion Support. It's for attended parents considering a donor egg pathway. There are beautiful people there from all over the world, and I'd love to see you there too. If you're interested in connecting or finding out more about the online courses that I offer, all the links are in my show notes. Sending love, and bye for now.